Good morning, members. Honourable members, in the absence of the chairperson of the committee is required to nominate the acting chair for the session. So I would like to call for nominations for the chair of the session. Mr. Makubele.
Thanks. Secretary, I nominate the Honourable Nomalungelo Gina to take the chair.
Thank you. Any second to that?
I second.
Thank you very much. I would like to request Ms. Gina to take the chair seat.
Good morning, honorable members. Thank you. Thank you very much for affording me this opportunity to chair this meeting today. We welcome you, honorable Mbonjan. Members, we are going to be starting with the adoption of the report and the minutes of which it will take. We need to be very short, then after that we'll allow the presenters from the QCTO to come and make the presentation to us. But now can we start with the report of the Portfolio Committee on the strategic plans? Are we starting with that one? No, we start with the report on the workshop on HISA. That will be the first one that we'll be dealing with. Then we go to the minutes of the 16th of May, and then we go to the draft report again, where CETA, of CETA on any water and energy, and the service CETA that we had last week. But for now, let us go to the report on the workshop with HISA that was held at, where were we, Anel? Yeah, at Stellenbosch University. I believe, honourable members, you have gone through these reports, and that is why I say we'll be a little bit faster when dealing with them, because surely you have made the corrections and the amendments where you need. They are needed. So let us go straight to that report. Any corrections on page one? Yes, honourable McQuaid.
The two reports on the what you call it, people that were taken. On the report, there was no remark on apology. Because in the street and Kibura and Banga was asked on the minutes, the draft minutes. If you look at the draft minutes, there was apology. If you look at the report, the apologies were not noted. Now, my question is, if you need to
the reports must be noted in the minutes. This is just the report. The apologies, I'm sorry. That is how we usually do it, but we can have a decision as to say, Anelia, there any apologies were received on these workshops? Are you talking about the minutes or the report?
Because on the other reports and the minutes, there is a
there are apologies. Okay, okay. No, we'll get into that one. If ever there is a set of minutes or reports where you feel that apologies were not reflected, can we? Yeah. So for now, we are on the report on the workshop with HISA. On page 1, any corrections? Honorable Makubela, your hand was up. Okay. Seemingly page 1 is okay. There are no corrections. Page 2. Page 3. Can I ask honourable members, till we get a chance to go through this report? Oh, okay. Yes, honourable Makubela. Makubela. Don't intimidate him, please.
Chair, I thought there are reports that we got last night or today, this morning. What is it?
We got them on Monday.
All of them?
Yes.
Then it means I did not do my job.
Okay.
And I see other members who want to be smart struggling as well. And I've actually confirmed with them. They confessed that they could not go through the report. At least that I can say.
But as long as they are not their shop steward, I can take it if you say you did not read it. So,
My honorable fellows next to me, who are not ANC necessarily, haven't done that. But I'm not sure. Perhaps you can give us some time, 5 minutes or so. We try and do a good job. Otherwise, we'll be adopting things that we have not necessarily thoroughly done the work. Alternatively, to try and assist the meeting, what we could do. Even if they are tasked, the principle may be that in the event we pick up something that needs correction, which may be a contextual matter, we be allowed to still raise that issue, even if it's on a later date. Yes.
Members, this is not the first time that this thing happens. Yes, we can agree to defer them to next week, but really, I think we need to be taking our work seriously, members. This cannot be allowed. It's worse if ever there are members within the committee who have done their work. Now we're going to be drawing them back as we are deferring these minutes to the next, to the following week. But I will just plead again as to say, if ever we agree that we defer them, because as it is, I think only 2 members I can see, they're very confident as to say they did read these minutes, and you see, we won't be doing justice to them. We'll be adopting things that you sometimes will come back to us and will not be in agreement with what is here. So can I just plead, members, that we go back, we read these minutes, all the sets of these minutes, so that next week it becomes easier for us to adopt them and talk to the minutes that we have. Honorable Chupajan.
But I was going to say, no, let's pass the minutes and perhaps resort to what my colleague has suggested, because otherwise, as you say, it reflects back on us. I don't think they are major. In fact, I've cleaned through the minutes. There aren't any serious issues here. For the benefit of our members who have read them, it's unfair to them too. So I propose that we continue and adopt Ms. Makubela's proposal. If afterwards there are, we can quickly note out those issues. Thank you.
Members, I will allow all the members to speak, but the bottom line of the thing is that we're not just adopting for the sake of adopting. It's worse when we still open that window as to say there might be things that we won't be in the position to see now and still open the window that you come back and do it? Why don't we defer them so that we know that by next week we'll all have read it and we are discussing these minutes, something that we know. I'm not opposing to what you are saying, but I'm just allowing other members to speak on it. So that at the end, what I want us to see being done is that we do justice, we do our, you know, we know that these are the minutes that we all agree on, rather than just scanning through and...
Okay. I agree with the ruling. I just want to, in favor of the secretary of the committee, you know, it was a resolution of this committee that we've asked for, that we need to get the minutes out, which is done, and have them at the next meeting approved. So I'm just appealing from our side so that we are all on the same page, that we've asked for it to be done this way. And now that we have the minutes ready, and I really appreciate it because the minutes are quite correct, that we just adhere to the ruling that we've done before, or the resolution that we've taken. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we agree that you defer them for next week, but and agree also this is the last time we do this. We'll stick to our resolution that you adopt the minutes every week after we had a meeting. So thank you very much. Anneli, can you call the presenter?
Just saying, part of the problem, and I don't want us to change anything, we'll try our best, but part of the problem is that Mondays, we are actually traveling back and at times arriving very late. Tuesday, if you have your day packed full, Wednesday morning we are here.
So,
exactly, but...
the airport, wherever you are. So...
No, we'll do our best. We'll do our best, don't worry. But, guys.
Good morning again. Let me welcome the team from the QCTO, led by the chairperson, the chairperson of the council. And this is for the first time that we meet QCTO, so it will warrant us to introduce ourselves so that as we continue their meeting, at least we know whom we are with here in this house, and to make things easier for us as we continue to engage. I will start with the members, honorable members of parliament, to introduce themselves, then everybody in the house, and give a chance to the chairperson to lead us with the introduction of her team. Maybe I'll start with myself. I'm Nomalunge Lugina. I'm just the chairperson for today, in the absence of our chairperson of the portfolio committee, which the apologies are still going to be taken, but I just want to apologize on his behalf. He's not well. The doctor has just booked him off, so we just wish him a speedy recovery as a committee. Can I give over to you, honorable member?
I'm Ngaba Bang, a member of the committee.
Morning, everybody. I'm Silence Makuvela, a member of the committee as well.
Morning. I wonder, Chair, whether I should stand it because I can only see two. My name is... My name is Alfred Bonjane, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Tutuzile Spear, member of this committee. Thank you.
Maya Tula's name in hiding.
Good morning. I'm Annelie Lotriet.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Laurie Bosman. I'm also a member of the committee.
Let's finish off with the introduction of the slide so that we can go to.
My name is Faith Kwaza, Parliamentary Communication Services.
Good morning, I'm Chantal Bo from the ANC Study Group on Higher Education.
Edward Forslum, Committee
Section Parliament.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Silwan Mahada, researcher for the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Pumulo Scorella from Department of Higher Education and Training, DG's office.
Morning. My name is Malevo Olumka from Department of Higher Education and Training, Skills Development Branch.
Good morning, Honourable Chair Members, Tien Stradeau, CFO of DHET, as well as Acting CFO for the QCTO due to the Memorandum of Agreement with the Department.
Good morning, I'm Peli Welolwana. I always make a point to say I have a job. I work at Wits University. I'm a chair of the QCTO at this moment. I'm glad to see the Honourable Member, Mr. Bojan, is still here. When I was still Dr. Man Lucy, he was here.
No, what's telling you? I was lying. Just to show that you know Mr. Mpojana from far. But we'll talk about that later.
No, I know also Professor Mayachu.
As young people, as in Gendo, I wonder what that.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Nashabella, the CFO, the Chief Executive Officer for the QCTO, which is the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations.
You don't know, Bojan. Okay, thank you very much for the introductions. I can't express how excited we are as a committee right now that you have this presentation from QCTO. It's like a long baby that has long been awaited for, and we are very eager to hear what is it that is going to unfold when it comes to the QCTO, and where can we get in as a committee to make sure that we even enhance the performance of the QCTO and the need that the QCTO, the many needs that are awaiting for the QCTO as a country. So I'm not sure, Chairperson, whether I think you are going to be leading the discussion to open the discussion and lead us as to what is it that we are waiting for you to hear from today. But before you even get in, starting from today, I know this is the first proper presentation that we are going to get, but we are still going to be interacting with you because there's so much that we still be needing from QCTO. There's so much that you still need to come and present to us things like your strategic plan, because we must know exactly from the background that you are coming to give us today as to what are the things that we can see unfolding in the near future. But we still need to go deeper as to say these are the strategic plan, these are the main targets that are there as to, so that on both sides we can be helped to see how best can we check, can have a track record as to how the QCTO is performing and all the like. So for today, basically, we need to go out here knowing exactly what QCTO is. We might be knowing that, but exactly now, as we are there constituted, what are your plans, where do you come from? That's the background that we'll be waiting to hear from you today. Can I hand it over to you then, Chairperson, to lead us?
Thank you very much, Chair. The way that we have planned is that the CEO will lead us with the background first, and then it may be after that I can be able to make some comments about where we see the QCTO going, because both of us, as you'll see, we are quite new in this job, but it doesn't mean therefore that there has not been a lot of thinking. But I would like the CEO to just get into the background and then I'll make some comments after that.
Good morning. I am, as I introduced myself before, Joyce Mashabella. I am delighted to be here today to share with you the work of the Quality Council which we refer to as the QCTO because its formal name is a real mouthful. The QCTO is one of three quality councils, the other two being UMALUSI and the Council on Higher Education. The work of the quality councils is to ensure that a sound education and training system, sorry, I thought the screen went off, sound education and training system exists for the country. Thus, the QCTO, for the QCTO, this means ensuring that there is developed market-driven occupational qualification.
Where you have you planned that you're intending us to see on the screen?
Not yet.
Not yet.
This is kind of the introduction.
Oh, no, I was just checking because I see members are here. No, I wanted us to be clarified.
Okay. So that our main goal is that there is to develop market-driven occupational qualifications that have a currency here as well as abroad. That when these qualifications are offered, that they are offered by providers that have the capacity to do so, and that the assessments are administered are of a high standard and are administered in a secure environment. In the recent past, occupational training had little or maybe no national leadership. As the entity responsible for managing occupational sub-framework, the QCTO's role is to stabilize the situation in many ways. But one of the most important ways we intend to stabilize the situation is by setting national standards for developing curriculum. In doing so, the QCTO has developed a model which governs all curriculum development for occupations. This addresses one of the lessons that have been learned over the recent past, where the focus was on the development of qualifications, but now the focus is on the development of curricula, which, amongst other things, determines what the learning consists of and how long the learning takes. You can imagine, sometimes we have a 5-day course in artesian levels where we wonder if a 5-day course is really suitable. The presentation today will show you the curriculum development process so that you can see the work that goes on with regard to this aspect of the QCTO. Now, I point out that occupational curriculum development is but one task of the QCTO. Another important task is quality assurance, which oversees the system to ensure that there are appropriate set of providers who can truly offer curriculum and that there are assessment measures in place that where tests and exams are administered, as I said before, in a secure environment, and that these tests really assess what a person has learned. The QCTO offers two types of qualifications. One is a full qualification requiring 120 credits at least. The other is a part qualification requiring the completion of 25 to 119 credits. And one should note that when you complete 25 credits, it takes about 3 months to do so. Now, the part qualification provides an excellent opportunity for many in the South African population because few in the population can afford, from a standpoint view of money and time, to commit more resources than that. These opportunities to pursue short periods of training that lead to employment are aimed at making people employable, thereby creating a better quality of life. To illustrate a short period training, I asked that I give you a very simple example, and that would be that of a forklift driver. Now, these occupations, as you know, are found throughout the country. You need forklift driving in the warehousing environment, the docks, the mines, and for the numerous infrastructure projects that make up the main component of the economic plan. Now, in this example, first a person becomes a forklift driver, and from there he can take another short program that will qualify him to do electrical charging. This would help him to be able to take care of the machinery better because, like cars, forklifts are dependent on electrical parts. The person could take another part qualification in servicing forklifts and so forth and so on, moving up to a level of a mechanic. Now, before I begin the formal presentation, I just need to take a moment to emphasize that the three quality councils have very different focus areas. The Council on Higher Education provides oversight of the qualifications and quality assurance for the higher education system. UMA-LUSI provides oversight of qualifications and quality assurance for the school system, and the QCTO provides the same for occupations. Each quality council operates in very different environments. The Council of Higher Education, its environment has three types of institutions: the universities as we know them, the traditional universities, the comprehensive universities, and the universities of technology. UMA-LUSI oversees the school system, whereas the QCTO's environment, unlike the other two, is quite multifaceted, involving training that lies in industry itself, the FET colleges, private providers, and even government entities. The QCTO's role is to look after occupational training, when we define occupational training as hands-on work to produce a product or deliver a service. Now, in the past, an occupation was easier to see. You had your nurses, your bricklayers, your boiler makers, and occupations like that abounded. But in today's world, it's a little bit more difficult to view, and I believe it's because of the growth in the services industry, as well as the fact that the work of a boiler maker or a cast maker is impacted quite significantly by technology, the most notable being a computer. Now, in this milieu, the QCTO is expected by mandate to manage the sub-framework. This means helping to ensure that all the parts of the system work together. And some elements of this system would be the FET colleges, the CETAs, the private providers, and industry, just to name a few of the main ones. Now lastly, and truly lastly, before I go to the formal presentation, I must inform that occupational or vocational education systems with an oversight agency like the QCT are found throughout the world, including the Southern African region. In fact, a study is currently being conducted to compare the various occupational systems within the SADC region so that as there is an interest in exploring the possibility of having a regional vocational education system. So I just wanted to give you just a bit of a view of the QCTO and what a quality council does, and I hope I've done that from that brief explanation. So now, okay, I do want to go to the sheets. Amen. Just to give you an outline of the presentation, items 1 and 4 are an overview of the work of the QCTO, that it is what it is required to do, that it's its mandate. And item 4 expresses what it intends to do and the systems employed to do that. However, before discussing the intentions and the system, a context of the situation is provided in items 2 and 3 there, the establishment history and the council composition. From there, we go to the achievements with respect to the establishment of the QCTO as a public entity, as well as we look at the achievements that we've accomplished on the mandate. The presentation concludes with a discussion about the QCTO qualification development model, which is a key feature that people need to understand. We then look at a few operational imperatives, a snapshot, a very brief snapshot of the strategic plan, and one of our key challenges, which of course is always money. Now you can see very clearly our mandate. The first is to advise the minister on policy matters. Another is to design, develop, and maintain occupational standards. And another is to quality assure those items once we've created the qualifications. And of course, the all-important objective of promoting the national qualifications framework. In terms of our establishment, I think it's clear, people probably know the history, how long it took for it to become a public entity, the QCTO, and that no public entity can get started unless it has a business plan. The business plan was approved, as indicated there, on October of 2011. And from October to April 2012, the QCTO was able to acquire 7 new staff members. I'm on page 4 of the slide and about to go to page 5. Okay. There you'll see our composition of council. And what we try to illustrate here is the wide range of stakeholders that are involved in the QCT effort. Oh, wait, I got to do some lot of, I have to do a lot of pressing for this one. I didn't, sorry. Somebody got fancy for me, and I just want it simple. There we go. Now, this slide shows the just the categories that exist in the business plan, that our service delivery model is the development and quality assurance of qualifications. We do have a strategic plan. We did have a strategic plan as part of the business plan, and it shows our organogram, our startup organogram. And what I'd like to point out is that we really had a desired organogram of 69 posts. We are now working only with 21 posts and 28 people in total. So that is a significant challenge for us, that is human capacity, a very big challenge. And I do need to point out here in public today that the QCTO staff needs to be commended for all the hard effort and work that they've done, because they have been taking on all types of jobs to try to make sure that the QCTO comes alive. So I wanted to publicly note their commitment and the gracious way that they have been working to ensure the development of the QCTO. And this slide is just trying to depict the organogram. You'll see that I commenced on 1 April at the top there. You'll see that we have short listings on the 30th of May and on the 5th of June for the chief directors. You'll see there on the CDOQ management side, if you look at the DDs, we have all of those positions filled. On both sides, that is the DD of qualifications, occupational qualifications design, and the DD occupational qualifications assessment. But what needs to be looked at is that of the 28 people that these posts represent, 11 are vacant, and 9 operate with assigned staff from DHET. I'm trying to illustrate here the capacity constraints we have with regard to human resources. The next slide just tries to show the establishment objectives that we have achieved in order to get the QCTO established as a public entity. So as I said, we've been working very hard. One of the main features was to get that MOA signed, because without that, we could not assume the public entity status. And one of the ladies at the office who likes to really make sure we indicate that we've opened our own bank account. For some reason, that's a really big thrill. We also have 44 job profiles graded and approved. We also are very proud that we have been able to meet our obligations in a timely manner. That is, our strategic plan was submitted on time. We've been able to do our quarterly reports also on time. Go to the next slide. This will list some of the achievements that we have done with regard to the mandate of the QCTO, and I've kind of grouped them into three large areas: policy advice of the minister. We've gotten our sub-framework in and done so on time. We've made our comments to the green paper. Our occupational qualifications and quality assurance functions, you'll see some of those achievements there. I think it's very important to know that the first QCTO part qualification has been recommended to SAQWA, so we're very happy about that. That's the first one to be registered should SAQWA approve it. And with that part qualification, we have developed a strong relationship with the International Education Examination Boards, the IEB, and both parties, the QCTO and the IEB, are delighted with that relationship. In terms of delegations, we have several delegations that we've made, and I'd like to point out the last one, the National Artisan Moderation Board. Again, we are working very closely with that organization, and the two organizations are again, very happy to be working together. Now the QCTO model, if I may take you through that. Basically, the model indicates that there are three components to a QCTO curriculum. That would be knowledge, the practical, and the practical would be things like simulation, and then actual work experience, working on the job. So we work with a variety of partners to develop those three items. And certainly though the partners worked with have to be industry related, because we want industry have faith and confidence in these qualifications. So they are a big part of creating the three components. Again, the three components are the knowledge, the practical, which is simulation, and the actual work experience. Now, as we create the three components, we also develop assessments for them. Because assessment and development of curricula go together so that you can assess what a person has learned. And then out of those two components, you get the curriculum component, you get the assessment specs, and that's when you get the qualification document, which gets finally loaded on the system. And this tries to depict that process in a more graphic form, showing you the various steps, nine steps, that have to go through to make up the output there at letter E, the occupational qualification itself. And it also tries to illustrate that the qualification consists of the curriculum component plus the assessment component. And you must have both in order to have the qualification loaded. We also try to illustrate from this picture that there are a variety of stakeholders involved in the process, not the least of which, I must say, is industry. As we come to the close, we need to look at the operational imperatives that we find quite significant for the QCTO. Articulation, of course, and one of our big projects is updating the N subjects in partnership with UMALUSI. The N subjects will be the N1, N2, N3, N4, N5, and N6. We need to look at the transitional arrangements. There are more than 1,000 qualifications that have historically been on the system, so we can't just drop them in midstream. They must be moved over to the new system, meaning that they must have the three component parts, the knowledge, the practical component, and the work experience. So there has to be a process in place that moves the CETAs from being the quality assurers to some other entity, as well as redesigning the curriculum to meet the three component parts. So we are working hand in hand with the CETAs to make that transitional arrangement. Another operational imperative for us is the recognition of prior learning. And if you'll look at that last part, it is our commitment to ensure that assessment policies of our assessment quality partners and their constituent providers have mechanisms for assessing learners for prior learning. And we know that prior learning means that learning that takes place generally can take place in the formal setting or the informal setting or non-formally. Again, we are proud that we submitted our strategic plan on time as required by the PFMA. And there you see the three goals that we set for ourselves, three strategic goals. Excuse my stumbling. I don't think I need to read them for you. And these are just a few highlights of the strategic plan, things that we want to accomplish this year, that is 2012 to 2013. This is just a few of them, but some of the important ones, that is to actually get qualifications recommended to SAQWA, because I said currently we only have the one right now, to get our assessment partner systems evaluated to be valid, and that would include the RPL component, making sure that our turnaround times are good, and to ensure that our providers are able to deliver the qualification curriculum. And then we get to our biggest challenge, as I said before, the funding issue. This slide just tries to indicate to you the requests that were made. If you look at the end of the slide where it says MTEF request, and the actual allocation you see in the middle there. So we have far apart from what we asked for, from what we received. And what we want to point out here is that really our major source of funding thus far is the voted funds, but we have been trying to mitigate that situation with those three alternative sources of funding. And I thank you.
Okay. I'm going to try and
move out of the CEO's presentation, I still recollect my times of coming to these committees, that you often get to meet with people who don't sleep and think about what you're doing, who also see education in a different way. And in particular, I know that at those times, the matric issue was the dominating factor. Outside of that, people didn't think much about that there's a lot of other education. The picture that I want to paint is that you have to realize, members of parliament, that both myself and the CEO are almost catching this train whilst it's on the road. And it's not only the Department of Higher Education that is catching the train of QCTO already on track, and because the department itself is catching this train already on track. The QCTO has got a history that comes from the Department of Labor. That's where the idea of a QCTO was conceived. And this idea was, the concept was developed through, I would like to say, a consultancy model. Consultants were funded by GTZ before it became GIZ, who were able to establish a particular model that the QCTO is going to be able to do. So when the functions moved over to the Department of Higher Education, together with that model, everything moved on. I'm going as far back as that because it also means that we also are catching this train, trying to figure out what the logic and idea of certain things are. The idea of a QCTO was that it would be that quality council that takes care of occupational qualifications. If one has to be able to make a distinction of what occupational qualifications are, because there's always the question of whether occupational qualifications are they different from vocational qualifications. What is it that, for an example, public FET colleges are doing that now, since those qualifications are looked over after by Umalusi, that this council is going to look at. I'll give you just some smaller examples that there is a difference between occupational qualifications and vocational qualifications. If you take, for an example, somebody who's doing an NCV, I'm hoping that you are familiar with those programs, the National Certificate Vocational, which are done in colleges. They probably will do something like office administration over 3 years. It involves a range of things, including accounting, including business economics, including I can't remember what other things, but it's a very broad range so that somebody can fit in any kind of office administration. That would call a vocational qualification. But if somebody specifically wants to go into a secretarial course, when you go into a secretarial course, you learn about typing, you learn about using the computer, you learn about filing, you learn about receiving people, you learn about all, just specifically to be a secretary. You can't pretend that you're going to do now project management. You can't pretend all those. So that is the difference, that the occupational qualifications tend to be very specific and tied to a job. And this is what this body has got to be able to do. One of the things that we're trying to steer is that in order to do that, we should not lose the public. We should stay on the course of looking as a first point of call on the qualifications that are known by the public. We can't have a body that suddenly appears with its own nomenclature and nobody knows, because even the employers will not know what that means. If now you call these people office executive, when they know that they need a secretary, give them what they know. They know what they expect from a secretary. Don't start inventing other things. And Beside, the other part of it is that we have got a huge volume of qualifications in the from the South African Qualifications Authority to what CETAS has developed. We find that there is a huge qualification bank, and there is duplication all over the place. And one of the things that this organization has to have a systematic way of ordering and organizing what is there, because in the end, it is going to be the people who are most vulnerable who are going to suffer, taking things that don't mean anything. We see ourselves as the mediator so that we do not expose vulnerable, poor and young people in a position where they have spent a lot of resources and time and efforts and doing things that are meaningless. In that way, we also have got to be able to look at what the CETAS have been doing over the years in the area of qualifications and quality assurance. Hopefully, we will find a simpler and an enabling system. It's a very complex system, and I'm sure once you start asking questions, I know the questions are going to be at that point of not saying we don't understand this. Many times I don't understand what the people are doing, because I feel we have complicated in South Africa most of what we have done. But we have not only complicated things so that people don't understand, we also have put a system that is not enabling. Because we've put upfront the condition of accreditation and all these things, we've squeezed the little that we have got about provision. We don't have a lot of what we can call providers in this country. We've squeezed them out. So it's the one of the things that we're looking at, how do we simplify this system? How do we enable it so that it would be more accessible? Because one of the principles we've got to stay true to is around access and equity in the system. We also have got to be looking at one of the most vague and undefined area of workplace training. We all talk about workplace training as if we all understand what it means. But we all talk about it in terms of different and multiple meanings. Everybody has got their own concept. But we have got to be able to engage with this concept, because for us as QCTO, it is a part that is important for not only for the qualifications. It might be the qualification itself. What does it mean for somebody to say, I got my training at work? I didn't go to school, I didn't go to an institution, and this qualification is valid. We've got to be able to get to that, to the center of that concept. But we also finding that in spite of the number of years that the QCTO has been operating, you are not the only ones who will say that as Parliament we don't know. The public doesn't know much. We're hoping that we can change that. We're hoping that we can change the way of informing the public about qualifications, our qualifications, and that the public could be ensured that the credibility of our qualifications. But we can also inform the public about the demand of our qualifications, because it is pointless to train people when there is no demand for that training. We are hoping that we will enter this space and steer whatever the course was going into that place where the public can be ensured that there is a body that is looking after their interest in terms of linking education and the labor market, because that's where we have to be strongest about. We are not foundational education, just providing education for knowledge. That is important, but there are other bodies. Ours is to make sure that we identify the areas where there is going to be a demand and inform the public. The question that I will always ask when I'm acting on in a body is where is the place to throw the stone so that it can cause a lot of ripples? Because in any situation, you are always faced with a sea and you do not know where to start. And the most important thing is to know what stone to pick and where to throw it. You will not hit every place, but you must make sure that it hits a place that is targeted and it will cause a lot of ripples. We think that there are places where it's evident that there is a pinch in our system. One of those is the young people who leave school with or without matric. They are the most vulnerable because there is very little for them to be able to do. And therefore, that is the group that we're thinking at the most about, that they've got to be prioritized in terms of providing what they can be able to take. We think about, there are various occupational qualifications that are in demand, but they've got no recognition out there, that they have got to be targeted for work. We also think that this is the opportune time to steer the skills development to areas of economic development. We cannot just be blasé about what we understand the country is trying to do, because that is the opportunity in terms of economic development. That's where the opportunities for the demand of these qualifications and skills are going to be. You take, for an example, the national health insurance system. That should be a big area that is going to be needing skills. The infrastructure development projects, those should be a big area. The manufacturing, developing the manufacturing capacity of this country. So at the back of all these big projects, we have got to be able to understand which qualifications and skills we need to prioritize and to make sure that there are people who are skilled. When these things are happening, they would be available. I just want to start with two questions, then probably will be much request with two requests. There might be more as we go into some discussion. You indicated, Chair, as to about your willingness to listen to the help that this committee could provide. I just had two ideas at the moment. They will probably develop others as we go on. But definitely the funding is an issue. We have an organization, and I'm saying this being aware of how government funding works. When you are starting a new organization, you always are at a disadvantage of starting at a low base, and then you move so slowly because of the METF rules. But it's an organization that is at the moment mainly funded for personnel. There is very little cushion for doing the operations of the organization. You cannot have an organization that is there to be able to pay salaries, and very little, there's nothing to be able to do the work itself. It doesn't serve any purpose. The QCTO cannot be established so that it can employ people. It doesn't make any sense to do that. So that is the area that needs to be really interrogated and looked at to say, how do we help this organization in terms of getting more funding? It's difficult when you're starting because there are no benchmarks of what exactly you need. It looks like you're thumb sucking. But secondly, I'm going to take out on a limb risking this because it's something that has not even been discussed with the Minister of Higher Education. It's something that I've been personally thinking about. I know in the Department of Higher Education there's always a lot of talk around the infrastructure projects and manufacturing, but there is very little around, I've heard about national health insurance system. I'm saying this because I do think that there has to be a point of discussion about the production of people who are going to work in this national health insurance system. And as long as it only depends on the Department of Health to produce those people, I don't think that we're going to go very far. I've seen most countries that have gone into national health systems, most countries that are able to equip their health systems with adequate personnel, they've got the production of those done by education, not by health. Because in the health system, there's a variety of occupations, even the production of nurses, but there's a range of people from dental assistants, emergency, EMT people, radiographers, a range of people who are on this middle level band that are usually produced by junior colleges, community colleges, FET colleges in other countries. I've not talked about it, I think that it's an appropriate avenue to start saying there must be in government some discussion on how health system is going to be, the personnel health system is going to be produced in this country if we are going to go on a mass scale of providing for health. I want to end there, Chair, and maybe we can start looking at some engagement even from people who are hiding over there.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and CEO, for the presentation. As of now, I'll just open this opportunity for members to question, to comment, whatever input that you may be having. I've noted Honorable Laudrant. Who else want to speak? Honorable Maya Tula, Honorable Bosman, Honorable Makubela, Honorable Bojan. In that order for now, I'll take other. I won't have a second round. Okay. Oh, you're still prepared. Okay, it's fine. Honorable Laudrant.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think first of all, one has to say that the whole funding situation is worrying. It is a concern, and I think one could perhaps look at ways. Quickly picked up here that you do make proposals in terms of the Skills Development Fund, that could possibly be an avenue to look at. What I would like to know at the moment, am I correct in my understanding that we're now in a transitional phase, whereas you've now delegated this function of quality assurance to SAQWA, whereas the intention is that it will be fully the QCTO's function in future. Where are we in terms of this process, and when do you foresee that there will be a full transfer to QCTO to fulfill that particular function? Thank you.
Honourable Maya Tula.
Thank you, Chair. I am putting my ESG spectacles where my constituency is. This is a new structure to me. I'm trying to get around it. I do know Uma Lucy was dealing with the schools. That was the field they were working at. They know they are going to go to that school and that school and that school. And the schools were there doing their own thing. CHE is dealing with universities. They are there on the field. They go to do with their programs. I'm trying to go now to the QCTO with East 21 people that is having now with IDF Act 96. Where it goes out to quality assured curriculum. Just clarity for my side. Where does it go? Who is there? What does it do?
Thank you very much, Honorable Mayatou. Honorable Bajan.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not too sure really what to ask. There's something that tells me I must ask something. The reason being, as you correctly said, we don't understand this. I don't understand this. It's a location within the broader qualification bodies. Now, here is, as Professor Sula said, over the weekend, I go to my constituency. The school invites me to speak on this. Where do I start? What is it? I would really have no clue where to start and what to say. We have an organogram, 46 posts to do what? Has it started? Where is it? But you said, well, we have just climbed on the train, which you find moving along to where? What is that destination? Really, can you just in simple terms? Here we are. We're doing 1, 2, 3, 4, and you committee members, if you do oversight over us, this is what you must make us account on. What is it really? Can I be helped there? Sorry, perhaps it's too early in the morning and too slow in the uptake. I'm not too sure. Thanks.
Honourable Postman.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I think it is quite exciting as you started off with. But I agree with some of the other speakers. A little bit unclear at the moment. I think what we have in South Africa, obviously, is quite a number of institutions that are trying to manage, control quality of education. And what you must just inform me, because it's more a dialogue to get information. As far as the occupational situation is as we have it at the moment with the CETAs, is quite in a disastrous situation. Many of these CETAs are not really getting through doing their job. The issuing of certificates in the end after learnerships and training has taken place is not really occurring. And as you stated on page 12, the transitional arrangements is that you are going to talk or maybe take over from the CETAs. I'm not quite sure that you must explain to us the delegation of the quality assurance that SAQWA was actually overseeing and mandating the CETAs to as a training, as a quality assurance agency. Are you going to take away from SAQWA that responsibility as far as all the vocational training is concerned and deal directly with the CETAs to make sure that there's a fairly short route that you need to take to get to the quality control in the first place, and then obviously to oversee that when training is completed that people get their certificates in the first place. I think the second thing that I want to ask is what happens to the service providers? Are you going to make sure that people who are in that training process in the different sectors going to also be up to a standard? Are they going to be registered? And how are we going to have control over them? I think you are saying on page 14 that you are going to recommend qualifications to SAQWA. Obviously, 60 qualifications, I don't know how many would there in the end, there could be many more. But then also on the assessment quality of the partners, 15 sounds to me very little. Are you envisaged to have many more of those quality assessment partners, as we all know that they are just about double so many CETAs in the country. So if you can just maybe explain a little bit more to us the workings, the intended rollout of the whole system. Are we not going to add on additional models onto the current system as it is at the moment, a little bit overwhelmed and not doing its job properly? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Makumba. Oh, Obanga wants to come
back. Yeah, no, the ruling party must start, must end. You see, I'm finding myself in this difficulty. I tried even yesterday to read this book. Because one of the reasons is that maybe the institution, as you are saying, it's a new establishment. I want to know, firstly, that maybe as we are also explaining, that part of what you are doing is that you are not doing more of your core functions. I want to know, as you wake up every day, as the professor is also saying, I want to know, what are the key focused areas that now, as an institution, are focusing to now, as we're talking now, to just stipulate those key, according to, that's what I want to get to understand, and it goes, what are you assuring? That's what are you assuring now? What you are busy with in terms of assuring. I don't want to assume, as we're saying, that you are more now administrative, that you are not doing research work in terms of building capacity of the institution. Are you focusing on research program to say how to expand the work we are doing as an institution to make sure that the mandate we are given we are able to perform? Are you busy with things like that? The other issue is around your funding. You are saying part of the challenges you have underspent in terms of your staffing. I don't know whether I'm correct. And also now you are saying your problem, you want money, but you are underspending. Convince me, what do you have the capacity to get more money if you are underspending only on employing and bringing in people? Or is it because of a period of time you have, but right now that makes you underspend? I want to assume, I like how the chair came into this because it also simplifies, and it took me to the debate of the post-education green paper. I'm very interested to see your submission. I'm going to tell you why I'm very interested. My assumption as a layman in this field is that you might be dealing with just short courses that are offered in the industry on day to day, where our parents go and do prior learning and so on. We spoke about 5-day course, somebody spoke about that, those things. And to me, with the current developments of focus to skilling of our people, there is still hope to say you can. But my question is that, do we need this? If we're talking about one single post education system in this country, do we still need so many fragmented quality assurance? Because to me, it goes to the issue of the quality and the recognition we have. This one is inferior because it's assured by OC2 something, this one by the other assurer, this one by that, and this one, because these things are so different. There's no synergy of what we are trying to do as a country. Therefore, that's why I'm so interested, Chairperson, to see if it is allowed, your presentation, because it will help us
as we're discussing the post-education green paper, to understand what is this thing, vocation, occupation, what is this thing, higher education, assurance, what is this thing, primary, assurance. Therefore, I want to understand in detail what is it that you have submitted, what is your perspective going forward, meaning it might also reflect that we must not support something, a new green paper that really is not going to take us far than making one single system of education and reducing even some of this quality assurance if needs be. Lastly, Chair. This one, I don't know whether you will be able to respond. I've just seen your board, I look at your board, community, and then I just picked up something. I hope that I hope, because we need some of these boards, we need time to do that. Some of these boards, the reason why they collapse and don't monitor the maladministration at the end of the day, that the people who are supposed to do the work and give oversight, they are not there to do that. And my main worry is that some of the names I see here, they are all over in all boards in higher education, all over, even in institutions. All over. I don't know whether you are relevant people for me to really ask this question, that the performance of board members who are spread throughout all boards, I don't want to mention name, but there is a name I know this year. It's all over. I don't know whether this thing of these boards is becoming a money-making scheme these days. But I'm saying the performance of your board members, all of them, particularly those who are representing communities, are they giving time to do the work that they're supposed to do? Thank you, Chair. Sorry for being long.
No, it's fine, Honorable. Today it's sort of a workshop, you know.
Yeah.
So you are allowed to go as far as you did, Honorable. Honorable Kumele.
That is informed by selfish interest. But it's fine. Thanks for what you shared with us this morning. Firstly, I think you managed as well to enter the debate that is out there, particularly from those who not want to give you space and say that perhaps we don't even need this third queue or quality council. We can do with the status quo as long as you assign scope to the rest that are there and so on and so on. People are talking different models and so on. And even if the presentation this morning does not necessarily kill the debate, but it goes a long way to engage even those who are in that space, so that if they're still convinced they need not exist, at least they will be engaging with you, unlike if it's quiet. I think I'm just led at that level. But still, your coming into existence was long awaited. And you won't be given space and time to just, like you said, you're catching this train running already. I think you fully understand what that means. Let me share with you, for instance, on RPL. The institutions that engage on RPL now, they are focused only on access, RPL for access to further education. Not RPL for qualifications. So they hardly give qualifications. And those who do so, based on prior learning, you find there's very, there's poor success rate in that regard. People will be arguing on issues of language, on issues of that cause them not to pass. But they know the work. And they will be arguing, particularly from unions, the labor federations. They will tell you that we have been doing this work all along. This company is profitable, it's successful because of us, but they can't pass this qualification. And if it's in the motor industry, are able to assemble the engines and disassemble that and so on, but they can't pass that when they go to the trust testing and so on. So I'm just saying, citing that area, to saying people are impatient out there, and the excuse for some time was that some of these institutions don't know what to do because we don't exist. Now you are there. I don't think you'll be given much space, you know, to want to get yourself intact and be able to run. The expectation is that you must immediately provide these solutions, and then it's a huge responsibility. But let me just raise a few questions rather than elaborating on those. Our focus, particularly as Parliament, is on transformation in the main. What we have been concerned about, for instance, at the level of CETAS, was that the service providers that were there were almost an indirect entity of the business that is in that industry. For instance, if you want to provide a course on motor mechanics and you are in VW, it will be VW that determines what is the course, and the service providers will be linked to VW. If you're getting what I'm actually saying. So these companies themselves stand by the other side and take the money. If you were to go there and say, who are these service providers? You will hardly find that there's transformation in that area. You know, and some can even tell you of these sitters that they don't even know what transformation is taking place in that particular regard. So you have a lot of money pumped there, but it's being accessed by particular service providers that have always been linked to that industry, if not indirect, what is close to that. And we'll want to see some changes in that regard. I just take it that whatever you will be doing, Chair, you were referring to the major investment areas by government, for instance. To me, it will be good to also go beyond that. Well, it depends on the capacity as well. That if government talks new growth path, talks industrial policy, talks the national development plan and all that, it should be documentation that as well guides you to think these are the critical areas that for purposes of development of the country we need to focus on, and then say what skills are required in that regard. You know, already there are those pointers. There's some consensus to saying this is what the country is lacking and should be able to deal with. So that you also know the size and expectations. For instance, if the president in the State of the Nation addresses will create so many jobs, obviously that is informed by something. Now, yours will be to say, do we have those skills to deal with that or not? And then assist in the qualifications where they don't exist in some areas or where they should be handled. The last part, Chair, from me would be that at some point there should be conclusion, speedy conclusion on the funding mechanisms or not. I don't think you must be uncertain for a long time, year in, year out. I think that should be concluded as a matter of agency, because like you said, Chair, that you can't be there to be seen employing people, just have full complement of your personnel, but you can't do anything. You can hardly get out of office. It's as good as earning from home. Mm-hmm. You know? Now, the difference of location, that those who are full-time do go to office. But upon arrival, they can simply go through computers and Google and all that, and telephone expenditure. Other than that, they won't do much. You know? So I don't think that's what we want to tell the country. You must be seen to be doing something, and there will be need for that. But the other area that is a major concern is that of articulation. And I think you are well versed with that. And it should be that you are able to assist, even these kind of people who are at the lowest level by now, who must be on the first entry, it should be hopeful for them to say, once I start, I can end up wherever I hope I want to be. Although I know small businesses always have a challenge of accessing these qualifications, and so mostly because they can't leave their companies not to run because they want to attend particular courses. But we hope the response in that case, the green book, no. There is a green book anyway, but the green paper, I'm not referring to the green book.
Please.
For those who know it. I'm referring to the green paper.
Yeah.
I've talked to the community education and training centers, which are being envisaged, and probably they could deal with this aspect. Because many of these small companies who may want courses, but they're running either their saloon there or something, can't afford to close that and go for some courses for some time. They must be there all the time to see that running. So, but there must be mechanism of assisting almost everybody you're targeting. Yes, the major priority could be the youth who are between the ages of 18 and 24 who are in serious problems because they can't be at work, they are not at school, they are nowhere, who must be seen to be responding to that situation as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Before I hand it back to you, Chairperson, I think you now get a picture as to why we had this meeting today before we even got into the strike plans, as I've said. Today, just speak a layman's language, you know. As I'm saying, this is a workshop. We are all getting into this chain that is moving, but let us try by all means. That is what exactly we are doing today. Don't talk this academic language. No, we are not yet there. Can we understand? As we are saying, we have these quality assurance that are there. As we are saying, we have a madness, we all know, we have accepted it, we are working with it. You are still going to be tapping onto the FETs. Where do we get in? Are we seeing you taking other functions from Umalus getting into you? What is happening? Just tell us, you know. We have got a slogan in the Department of Education, the Minister has got a slogan saying every working place is a training space. Where do we get in? You know, what relationship will you have with all those industries, and where do you see you fitting in such things? Talk that language to us today, please. Another thing, even looking at your organogram, we are taking people from Department of Higher Education, Labor, SACA, we are still having vacant posts. Just show us the picture. How are you harmonizing all that thing? You know, they are coming from different backgrounds, are all bringing them together under you, CEO. What challenges are you being faced with? We just want to understand more as to what QCTO is doing. Where is it? Really, I'm appealing for you to speak to a man that you find in the street right now. Even yourself, you said you find this thing going, but let us all start together again. Then let us all get into in one station as for now. Over to you then, Chairperson.
Okay. I'm a little bit intimidated because I thought what I was trying to do was exactly to simplify what we have to talk about. I'm going to pick up a few questions, and I would leave some for both the CEO and the CFO in the department, especially around the funding that you probably might augment the CFO. Maybe let me also reveal a little bit about myself before I go into this, because I probably have my own biases and prejudices as well. I'm a human being. On a full-time basis, that's why I keep on saying I don't work for the QCTO, I have a job. My full-time job, I'm directing a new research unit at the University of Witwatersrand that is focusing on research in vocational education and the labor market.
So I'm saying that because I have a view about the things that are usually pointed around about RPL and so on. We can take another time discussing what works and what doesn't work. Also, about two or three jobs back, I was heading in Lela at Orphans Funding. So I come here with a package of certain things that I would say I've seen that. I've just said also I studied Umalusi, and I'm not reading a CV, but I have a package, a particular slant of viewing things. So some of the things I might be able to say is because of that package and baggage that I come with. I want to quickly tackle just two things that are smaller and then go. I think there are two bigger questions that I would like to try and address. I think the last question about transformation is a question that I really do appreciate, that it would be helpful if we all can find ways of ensuring that there is some form, there is transformation in the system. I know this is a word that is bandied around, and again, it's one of those words where we have got different meanings about it. But I wanted to just latch on that quickly because there's also another request that I want to put forward to the portfolio committee around the linking of skills development with the big projects. We don't do that very well in this country. We get the big projects and they pass us by and we still remain without. One of the things that Australians are doing, I've marveled around Australia, are doing it and doing it very well. Government doesn't issue any tender without any conditions for training. That if you are going to get money from government, whether it's construction or anything, it has got, there is a formula that has been developed by the Australian government. If it is so many years, if it is so much, you need to be able to have produced so many artisans, you need to produce so many. And it comes, it's a given. And I've always wondered, why is it our government doesn't do that? So as we are going to get into this big stage of infrastructure development, I'm hoping it's one thing that you can push for. The second thing that I want to dispose quickly is around the council. The council is being was put together by the minister in 2010, and I've just joined last year, October. It's a highly representative council, but I want to think that the problem of the council has been on the other extreme. I think there have been so much, there's been so much demand put on that council because up to early this year, there was no staffing except for the acting CEO, Ms. Adrian Bird. She was literally depending on that council. That council had 10 or 11 meetings a year, plus ESCO, plus committee. They met almost every 2 weeks. It's one thing that I said, you stop, we have got jobs to do. We're going to have to build an organization that must do the job and we have to oversee. They were almost doing the work of the organization. I've never seen a council like that. It was overly stretched in terms of performance. The meetings in the council, they start from 9 up to 5 o'clock, whether it is EXCO, whether it's a committee meeting, and they meet almost every other week. So that I can vouch for that we have a council that has been overstretched. Part of it has been because there was no capacity in QCTO. And this is what we are going to have to concentrate on now, to build the capacity in the organization itself, and we move out. Let's talk to the, I think there are two main questions that I wanted to tackle. What is the QCTO?
Can I just chip in?
Mm-hmm.
Just the meetings of councils, did it involve claiming for attending the meetings?
I don't know. Thought about that, but I just thought about myself. I would never be able to attend meetings. I have a job. When I got there, I said, there's no way you can do this, because I never thought about that, because they met a whole lot more than any council could.
Fine, Chair, we'll get that when we go deeper into the functions, because when it comes to the budgeting and the funding, which we are going to get, how much do we get for the allowances of attending those? I think Umponjana will soon be.
Okay. That. Okay. But I don't want to meet that often. Let's start to talk about what is this GCTO in relation to the other bodies. What does it do? In the education and training sphere, we've got different forms of training. We've got basic education, which is the schooling part, which we know that it culminates at the grade 12 examination. That is what Umalusi's function is, to ensure that there is quality, there are standards for that part of the system. But Umalusi, even during my time, had started looking after the qualifications and also the functions that are happening in public FET colleges, even when they were technical colleges. So there is a legacy of that is still remaining with Umalusi as a body. So Umalusi is taking care of both the schooling and public FET and private FET colleges. There is higher education, but there is this kind of education that has been taken care of by SETAs. The education and training that takes place at work, that is much more training focused. As I say, that there is a difference between a vocational and an occupational. So it is in that area that the QCTO is, that is the QCTO's space. This is where the SETAs have been functioning. The SETAs have been having functions of collecting levies, but the biggest function has been that of ETQAs, Education and Training Quality Assurance. Each SETA has had an Education and Training Quality Assurance, which developed learnerships, take care of trades, and also make sure that the service providers are accredited and monitor the assessment. That is the part from the SETA that is coming to the QCTO. But there is still a question, because the QCTO's work, when it's only concerned about occupational, not general vocational, not general basic education, not general degrees, but its work overlaps what is being done by Umalusi and what is being done by CHE. For an example, there is a question about many of the qualifications that are done by universities of technology, because some of them in nature are occupational. In the FET colleges, there is an overlap of what is being done. If, for an example, somebody is training, is wanting to be, and is preparing him or herself to be an artisan, they would have to start in a college and then go to do a trade. So that connection is still there. I'm going to talk about institutions a little bit later. The discussion about whether we need so many quality assurance body is still there. Personally, I'm one of the people who would argue that we probably don't need so many quality assurance body without risking people's jobs, that the people would not have their jobs. But the challenge is that you can't, the two other spheres, Umalusi and CHE, are developed in their functions. You can't just put these things together without developing this part. I'm clear about that you need to develop the occupational qualification spheres and give them their own identity before you put them together, if you are going to put them together, or find a way of relating, because it is the weakest in the system. Part of the weakest being weak in the system is because the SETAs chose for some reason not to engage with public institutions. They used primarily private providers. they used workplace providers, and they use what I call transient providers. Transient providers for me are those people when you can say, I have a learnership in hospitality and tourism. I want a service provider, and somebody pitches up and say, a person, I can provide that. And then once they got the tender, they start putting together whatever systems to provide that. Once the tender is gone, they no longer provide that. They're going to another place. So they don't build the system. So it is in those areas where we've got to be able to figure out how do we build consistent and credible providers that are also going to make sure that everybody has access to this system of providers. It's not only a selected few. You are talking about providers in the private companies. I want to think that we should not throw away the baby with the bathwater. Unfortunately, I'm a person who likes to study the history of things. Before, we are very quick in our country to kind of like, no, this is not good, it's a party thing, or it's this and this, let's throw it away. I want to think that there is merit in terms of having companies having training providers, because they do a particular, they have a particular role. But it's not adequate that we have only them. We've got to be able to see how do we expand and how do we replicate the system. I'm very familiar with the motor industry and how it works and the big industries there. And I think that there is not, the public system cannot be able to replicate what, for an example, Barlow World has got, what has, Nissan has got. But it means, therefore, that we have got to be able to latch in there and say, how do we complement what Barlow World can provide and what that, and how do we make sure that these big companies are expanding their access in order to take more. There are things that are good about what is happening on those providers. However, the QCTO then has got to be able to say, what are the institutions of QCTO? Professor Mayatula, your question about the institutions. The colleges are public and private colleges, belong to Umalusi, but they also belong to QCTO in some ways, because when we enter in, it's around the connection of workplace and the institutional training. So there has to be a conversation with other quality councils. What do they take care of? What do we take care of? The production of an artisan takes place by bringing in two kinds of institutions. It's an education institution like a college plus a trade center in order to be able to produce an artisan. So there has got to be some conversation. There has to be some conversation with CHEs about the occupational qualifications that take place in the TOTUTs. But we also have a murky place around the workplace trainers and the private providers that we also have got to sort out as to which providers we think are useful, and in particular with the way that the CETAs have been dealing with providers. And that is the part that is got to be clarified and cleared by us. So if we can, maybe we can make it very, very simple. Is our starting point is to be looking at those service providers that have been used by CETAs and making sure that they make sense, they are sustainable. But again, putting my view forward, it's my view. I think we also have taken this thing about accreditation too far in this country. It's restrictive. It's a tick box exercise. It's not really enabling the things that needs to go to happen. You take Brazil, what has happened with Brazil? Brazil has got the least control of their providers on the ground. And they have a model that says the government's role is going to make sure that all citizens have got a chance, are provided an opportunity. This is how we're going to close the gap. An opportunity for the Brazilian is to making sure that the government keeps on checking the lower levels, because in Brazil, everybody knows which class, the five classes, they know, they are very, it's a language, a common language. I'm class four, I'm class three, I'm class five. It means your socioeconomic status. And you know that, you carry that, it's not a stigma, it's not anything. You know that, you know also what you deserve to get. And the lower levels, they know that if you are class five, which is the lower, you know what you are supposed to give if you are class one or class two or class three. So they go around, they say, no, I've moved from class four to class three. So but because of that openness about the socioeconomic status, they have been able to make sure that there's a range of provision that is available for the lower levels, and the government helps to make sure that it happens. They don't restrict it with the many restrictions that we have had. So education, in fact, they say employment is the one thing that gets people out of poverty. And employment is linked to a skill. And the skill is linked to providing the opportunities for people to get that skill. So I think that we're going to have to check through our restrictive modes of saying, yes, we don't want fly-by-nights, but on the same time, we can't go on with this system that means that in order to be able to, for anybody to provide anything, you've got to check piles and piles of things which don't mean much about the quality of education.
Before you hand over to a person, where do you get in as QTCO in the University of Technology, Universities of Technology, because that is where we see that where I cannot distinguish between vocational and you know, but what is your take on that one when it comes to the University of Technology?
You shouldn't be asking me, because I've got many, many, many opinions about many things on life. One of the problems we have, as I've said, that is really pinching in this country is around people who are getting out of grade 12. And we do not have enough universities in this country for them and spaces. And the question is that, does one start by focusing on the universities of technology or on the colleges? And my suggestion to the QCTO, and which they are taking up, is that this gives us an opportunity to put those certificates and diplomas that the universities of technology have been moving away in the public equity colleges. And so the conversation has started with the CHE, because the universities of technologies have moved away from the higher certificates. And there are very few diplomas, national diplomas, that they are offering. So our move is to get into the FET colleges and offer them, but with a clear view that those will articulate into those students will get in the midstream, because that could relieve the pressure that is out there, that grade 12 students, when they get out of school with their poor metric, they would have a place to go that is not going back to the NCV, but it allows them to get into a qualification that when they proceed, they will go further. I think that later on there is going to be a discussion that we're going to have with the UOTs about their own qualifications. But we think that that is not the immediate step, because they don't have as many places as well. Further colleges will have more spaces, and we can create an articulation. We are the only country where we've got colleges that do not offer higher education.
Most countries offer higher education qualifications in the form of community colleges, junior colleges, foundation degrees, and so on. I do not know there is a joke that is going on that we are not part of here. And I can see where it's coming from the honorable member, Mr. Mbonchan. I know where it's coming from. So we are not stressing about the University of Technology, but we want to say, give us that which you are not taking, which is why it is important, where we are going to engage with them, is that we do not have to develop new qualifications for those. If a UOT, as it was a Technicon, used to offer a certificate in auto mechanics, auto mechanics, because they used to offer those. Let's see in what form. And we offer it as it is so that they would understand what would it lead if somebody comes in now and wants to pursue a BTEC midstream. So we want to take over what they have left behind.
Thank you to my chairperson. She's answered most of the questions, I think, but I think a few that are lacking are the actual operational aspects that we are now. And I think what's happening now is that we're looking at what exists, what's out there, what do the qualifications actually look like, how many are there, what does it take, what did it take to get them, is it linked to a learnership? And when we find out about that, that's so important for us to be able to do that transitional phase. So that's why we're engaging significantly with the CETAs to understand what they've been doing, how they've been doing their quality assuring, how they've been doing their accreditation, because we cannot just throw a totally new system into place. It will disrupt too many things. And at the same time, we can't take forever to do this, but we must do our base work. So that's what when you ask me, what are we doing now? We're doing a lot of base work to find out what's out there and how does it work and how are we going to put this into a transition piece that we can all live with, that is the CETAs, the nation, and the QCTO. In that regard, as I said, one of our big projects is to work with the CETAs, doing some monitoring and evaluation. Although SAQA did do monitoring and evaluation, we're going to be doing a little bit, doing it again, or another round of it, and taking what SAQA had been looking at and putting it with what we've had. And with regard to the SAQA staff and the DAGT staff we have, they've been with us for a long time. They've been there longer than I have, but they just can't be called QCTO staff because the QCTO didn't exist. So it's not like they didn't have any staff, and it's not as if it were changing a total culture. These people have come in, they've worked on the ground, they feel themselves to be QCTO staff members. They just can't be called that because all the I's and T's and things haven't been crossed and dotted to make them actual staff. There are procedures that have to happen with regard to HR. So for me, as the new person on the block, I'm the newest one still trying to call myself the QCTO. The rest of them are fully aware of where they stand and want to see the organization succeed. I'm not sure if I've answered the member's question behind you with regard to where we stand now. I don't have a good time frame for you right now, but what we have done is extended the registration for a 3-year period, and with that extension comes, depending upon the qualification, a teach-out period. Again, we can't just leave people stranded. They're starting somewhere that would just cause upheaval. Again, because we don't know the exact number of qualifications that we're dealing with, it's difficult for me to say. We also have staff capacity. Only so much can be done. The member here asked, what do we quality assure? Right now, we don't have the staff to quality assure anything, so we have to find quality assurance partners. That's why you hear the letters AQP, DQP thrown around, because our staff can largely, at this moment, be a supporting role to make sure that the people who are doing the work are doing it properly and according to the model that we've developed. One of the things that we are trying to do is to, as we put this model into place, is to observe it, document it. You talked about research. You asked about research. That's, our biggest research focus right now. Make sure we document how that process happens so that in the end we can have a new model, a variety of models, but we spent a lot of time developing that model, so we can't just throw it out now. We need to build confidence from the public
if the public understands what we're doing. And if we start all of a sudden to chuck out things before we've had a chance to drive it, I don't think that'll be a good way to go. So I'm hoping I've answered both that member's question. Okay. Then I think I'm done unless I didn't answer any other questions.
So I'm still there on wanting to make sure that the public understands you and know what it is that you're doing. How are you advocating this? What is it? How are you making sure that you make the public know you?
Well, we want to go out and be known by the public when we have a good qualification, solid qualifications. And that's where we think we'll make our stand. When we step out, we want to step out clean and good and nice. And we only have the one qualification right now, although there are a number within the trades that are at the point of being registered. One of the best ones is something called, I think it's called gold miners. No. But anyway, what happens is once the gold is mined, they have people there who can do the beneficiation part. And that particular qualification apparently is almost ready to go. And we have several others in the trades like that. So I think the trades are going to be a big lead-off that we have. One of the other big lead-offs that may be a bit controversial, as I hear from the member here, is that we do have a foundational learning one where we're trying to make sure that people understand some certain basics with regard to math, literacy, and communication. Not that people can't RPL and shouldn't get a qualification and hold them back or anything, but sometimes there's just certain basics that need to be known. So that's another one that we're thinking of might be pretty strong and a nice kickoff. So we want to kick off with a qualification that's solid, with partners working with us that are solid and are building for the nation and not for themselves.
Let me do this. I will give you the second chance to come in, unless you say there's something that you don't want to. Yeah, it's just a follow-up on this one, because I wanted to give the department a chance so that I can come back and take another round. But if ever it's pending, it's a follow-up on just what she has said. I can allow you to do that. The pending issue. Okay. No, let me give you a chance.
Now all of a sudden I've got a spokesperson. She will ascend to the stage to either 5 or 2. The prof will locate me properly where I belong. No, you see, what I wanted to highlight, it may not be directly to that, but the challenge which also is there, perhaps indirectly you might have referred to it. You have, let's take those who are electricians. You have ESCOM with its own institutions training electricians. You have Transnet doing the same and having their own. They can't trust another one. You have our public FETs training electricians. Often, ESCOM, which is government, it's a parastatal, can't recognize that much what our public institutions do. And that's the problem we have, that when, as government, you produce, you're not necessarily producing for these big markets, because already they've got their own. They produce for themselves. And those ones end up just as individuals trying to employed themselves, self-employed or going somewhere, but they can't get to those they aspire to get to. I know that what you're saying is that you will try and create a qualification that cuts across. What I'm thinking aloud now is whether that, well, I know you're saying industry will be brought on board, whether we won't be upping the standards to the extent that our public colleges perhaps are not able to get that, because perhaps they were providing the basic, and industry is high up there, so advanced that it does not want to recognize the basic offering that government does give. So I'm just thinking perhaps that we can be assistant to how do we respond to that situation, because it's now, whether your capacity is that much or not, but we're facing the qualification that exists out there, but is somewhat in different
let me try and attempt to respond to your question.
Let me just try to save time, because I see three hands or with follow-up questions. Maybe they will, you know. Can I take Honorable Banga than Honorable Bachan?
Yeah. To the CEO, just on the issue, I think you are not clear on the issue of time frames. As asked, what would expect is that, because when you form a new institution, it's based on a vision, a long-term vision. You must be able, maybe when you come back, to say, this is where you are, this is where you intend to be within this period of time. You can't just have an open-ended when you have a qualification that you have defined. That's why I always insist, maybe before we leave, I would want to get to understand, maybe that will be in your presentation that was submitted to the Green Bay. Where do you want to go? We must be able to have clarity, because it will make us understand the direction of the institution. It can't only to say that we will only focus on building the foundation of an institution. Yes, the foundation of the institution, which is understood, is very important. But what we are more interested in, achievements, the output of your core business. Therefore, you must be able to come very clear on that. If I was your chairperson in a board, in terms of my performance, evaluation of what you achieve, I would base that from that. Nothing else. Do you understand? I hope that the CFO would also come on this thing of expenditure. I understand that you might not need to spend now, because you are not necessarily hands-on on quality assurance now. But I'm a minister, you want money from me. You cannot justify to me that we are unable to spend this small money that I've given you to employ and put your infrastructure development. You have not been able, and they are saying, you need more to do the actual work you're supposed to do. Therefore, I would need that kind of an explanation. Thank you.
No, just a simple question. Thanks again for, I think one has got a better understanding now. But I was just now looking at the five objectives, what the council has set out to do. Simple question. The council hasn't started to quality assure anybody. That's the understanding. You are still studying what CETAs are doing, who is doing what, and you haven't started that. That's my understanding. But is the intention to start when? I'm not sure.
All right. We have two issues that have to be dealt with. One is our IT system. In order for that, for us to be able to make sure we can put a qualification on board, there are certain areas that we need to deal with. Certification. We need to deal with the, you know, you have to certify. You have to have a system of certification. So we're working on that one. And we also have the system of assessment. Now, that's a bit of a problem because we have to have partners to do it. We don't have the staff to actually do the assessment ourselves. And so that deals with a fee structure and several other forms that we need to make sure we get completed. So those things are the kinds of things that we're working on, trying to get rid of all the bottlenecks to say that when a qualification comes in, this process happens, and we need to make sure that all the elements are in place to make that happen. Right now, I can't give you a time frame. I'm sorry. So I'm glad you said when I come back next time. When I come back next time, if she doesn't call me too soon, I'll be sure to have better specific time frames, because, as I said, we're just trying to make this model work, putting all the elements in place. And that goes with our confidence building again. We can't come out there and say we're ready and we have half of a system. So right now what we do is, it's part of the system that we have designed, is that those quality assurance is delegated to other people who understand quality assurance, like the IEB. They've been doing it for a long time. NAB, the National Artisan Moderation Board. So we get people who are well-versed in the process to do it. And we do have people lined up, but there are certain challenges, as I say, we have with the fee structure, certain elements that we need to do internally, like having some kind of a document that actually captures what happens with the assessment. And those things are high priority for us. We only hired staff. Some of the staff only began only 10 April. And so we haven't had a chance to really go through those items. But there, we have two teams that are working. One we call the development team, who's working on that development model. And that one is more advanced than the advancement, I mean, than the assessment, because the staff who were there previously, or that Sakwa delegated people and the DHE assigned people, they had an opportunity to take that model from the beginning with development and put some of the older qualifications that sat with the CDIS to put it through the model to see how it works. So that's more well advanced, more documented. The assessment side, we just really hired the two people to actually do that work. So that's why that's lagging, and they're trying desperately to put in policies and things of that nature that will guide their work. And then we can tell you better. There was something else, somebody else. Unless I answered everything, I think I'm pretty good.
Also to just add on what the CEO has just said, the QCTO was established in 2010, and there was a council and an acting CEO who met very frequently all the time. I was brought in. And as I've said before, one of the things that I realize is that for some reason there is no organization, and you cannot be a chair of an empty space. That the reasons for not having an organization were multiple, part of them because the structure was not approved, because there was not enough budget, and that comes to the point of funding, because when the funding was approved, the structure was not approved to employ people, and there was an underspend because they could not, and so on. But the focus for the couple of months that have been is to make sure that there's an organization. I mean, they still functioning at what I call the basement of the Department of Higher Education. They have no offices. They function somewhere where the higher education people don't go way down. That's why they're delegated.
We do have windows.
Yes, in the building. So it's a priority to make sure that there's an organization you can talk to. Instead of, so that is why all these things have not happened. And Joyce is the first face. There is a reason why we could not employ the acting CEO after all of that. So Joyce is the first person who is going to be accountable to make sure that there are warm bodies, and warm bodies who are credible, who can do the work. She is the person who is going to be able to say to us, these are the things. She has not even had a council meeting, or except for that strategic planning, to say, now that we have had all these things, this is where I'm going, these are my timelines, this is what is going to be done, and we hold her accountable. So believe me that I'm probably one of the most hands-on in this process in terms of things that have got to move. But we're starting from nothing, a lot of talking that has been going on for too long in that organization. I'm surprised that all these years you've never called the QCTO. You should be much more informed about what they said they were doing. I just wanted to answer your question about the trades. The making of a trades, we've got to understand that it has got three parts. It has got the institution one, where you used to go and do your N courses and now you do your NCV. It has got the practical side, where you are trained the hand skills of doing things. And it has got the work experience, where you actually go and spend time in employment and do that. So when we're talking about the ESCOMs and the institutions, the functions of these two things, two places, have been different. ESCOM is likely to be involved in the training of the practical part after they've got their foundation education in the college. And because ExCom is an employer as well, they would likely to be able to expose them, to involve them in work experience. There are a number of things that have happened with our trades that we find ourselves in 2012 to be. First of all, the decline of training, the change from end to end to NCVs, and so on. So before we just say ESCOM is not doing that, we've got to be able to say, how now do we link this new NCV with the practical side of training and the work experience? How do we make the state-owned as a starting place to be able to be committed into taking the thousands and millions they used to take? How do we commit the private sector? And I think that is the role of government, to be able to do that. Is it right? And I will always say, we should not train if there's no demand for that. It's a waste of people's time and money to train people for jobs that are not there.
Chair, perhaps just to give some explanation on the financial position, I do want to go back to 1 April 2010 when the Department of Higher Education and Training was established. At that point in time, when we inherited the functions from the Department of Labour, QCTO was but almost like a directorate within the functions that we inherited from the Department of Labour. And the responsibility of the Department of Higher Education and Training at that stage was then to, based on the provisions in the Skills Development Act, bring to the attention of the Minister of Finance and National Treasury that the QCTO exists, however, it's not yet a listed public entity. We did that as required by the PFMA, and the Minister of Finance then on 31 December 2010 physically listed the QCTO as public entity. The agreement that we had with National Treasury at that stage was that for that started financial year of 2010-11, the QCTO will remain part of the structure of the Department of Higher Education and Training. So all the expenditure that one see for 2010-11 was the spending of that specific directorate. It was much lower than the budget itself, and it was agreed also at that stage with Treasury, because of this startup phase that might take a year or two, that Treasury would allow the rollovers. That's where in the presentation there's reference to the 8.5 million rollover. So although it sounds like a huge amount, but it was partially because of the fact that listing took place so late, we couldn't spend on the QCTO funding based on the establishment and everything for that financial year. And the agreement with Treasury was then to say, let's roll that amount, let's keep it as a potential surplus for the QCTO as soon as they start to operate independently so that they have sufficient start-up funding. We did also, as part of the MTF process for the 2011 MTF, submitted a bid to National Treasury for increased funding of the QCTO. You would see in the presentation that it was indicated that no additional funding was received. We did agree at that stage also with Treasury, as long as we receive then this rollover, one will have sufficient funding for the startup process. And the agreement is that in the new MTF period for 2013, which we expect guidelines from Treasury during June, July, that we will then submit a bid and hopefully by that time a better strategic direction so that one can include in the bid what actually is required for the future. One of the biggest delays in spending is certainly the staff establishment. Fortunately, to date, quite a number of positions have been advertised together with the QCTO and our HR component. I think shortlistings already start next week on most of those positions, and hopefully that process will soon increase quite substantially. Then on, I think the funding areas, and there's also the one item on slide number 16 on possible alternative sources of funding. The funding model that the CEO referred to already, which is currently in serious discussion with the Finance Committee of the QCTO. The other area is already also included as part of the draft regulations for CETA funding, which is the possibility of obtaining a 0.5% of the CETA levies, of the skills levy portion, to be transferred to the QCTO. That would be a substantial increase on the QCTO funding, close to almost 30 million if all the estimates work out. And those amounts will then be directly linked to specifically the quality assurance function and the development of the curriculum. There's also the possibility, although that's not been fully explored yet, of approaching the National Skills Fund for some project funding if there's a specific project that needs to be launched by the QCTO. Perhaps just also to touch on the issue of the remuneration of the council or board members, perhaps to assure the committee that whatever remuneration is paid to the board members is based on the evaluation of National Treasury together with the DPSA, based on the framework that was approved by the two ministers. And in the case of the QCTO, a classification process did take place, and the Minister of Finance eventually approved that the QCTO board be remunerated at what I refer to as Category A2, which is not the top category, but it's the same category as the other quality councils. I have the average tariffs or remuneration tariffs. The chairperson receives approximately 400 rand per hour. The vice chairperson, although there is not yet one officially, would be 350 rand per hour, and normal board members 325 rand per hour. And those are the tariffs approved by the minister with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. If there's anything else, maybe just the IT system that the CEO referred to. In the budget for this financial year, 4 million has been set aside to develop that system and to get it operational, and we do hope that everything will be in place as soon as we can appoint a chief director to manage that process. Hopefully that will happen soon. Thank you, Chair.
No, honourable members. Honourable members, as I said today, it was just the beginning of this. We are still going to have a broader discussion because I believe today it was just to. Okay, before I conclude, honourable my attorney.
I just wanted to take up Professor Lola on her observation that in Australia the government contracts go hand in hand with training, which I think is a very important observation. I would have, if she could write just one paragraph, one page, to say what is happening there, so that as a committee we can take it up with the relevant ministry. I just make that proposal.
Surely she can do that for us. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that, Prof. Maya Chun. Now, as I'm saying, honourable members, I think we need to come to the end of today's meeting. But with the ending, as to say, this was just the beginning. QCTO will still need you, Anel will be in touch with you it won't be long anyway, where we need you to come now with the whole plan and the strategic plan that we have as the quality council as for QTCO, and with us it would have given us a chance to go in and understand and try to understand more on what QCTO is all about, but we're still having that day open for you where we can discuss broadly so what is it, what your mission is as for QTCO. But really, we really acknowledge the need for QTCO. You are here to address really that part of our constitutions down there that has not been well catered for. If the chairperson is talking of those unemployed youth that are there, where most of them do not even have hope, as to say there is something that would come up of their life. If ever we start to have things like this, really we do see the light at the end of the tunnel as to what can we do with these vulnerable groups that we have in our country. So all in all, as a committee, we'll wish all the best. We wish whatever you do really can have great impact in upgrading the lives of our people in the country. So all the best. We'll see you on the day when Anelo will have communicated with you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Members, can you just remain behind just for 5 minutes? Just for 5 minutes. So that there is a program, a very short program, that you just need to look at as to what is it, what are we going to be doing on our committee week. There is an oversight that you'll be having to the Eastern Cape. Members, as from the 4th, it's our committee week has for, if you look at the Parliament's program, but it's, and also from the 19th to the 22nd, is also our committee week period. So starting from the 19th, we'll be embarking on our oversight visit to the Eastern Cape. That is the 19th of June to the 22nd of June. Yeah, it means we'll get there in the Eastern Cape on the 18th of June. That will be a Monday. We'll start with our work on the Tuesday, the 19th of June, where throughout the week we'll be there in the Eastern Cape. We'll be visiting Walter Sisulu University of Technology, that is based at Mutata, the Mutata campus. The following day we'll be at the University of Fort Hare, at Alice. The following day, we'll be visiting two campuses, that is the Buffalo City FET College and also the Lovedale FET College. It's London.
Then on Friday, the SMS Thank you.
would recommend and encourage everyone to be very exposed with all of us and the team to go through the whole COVID for them. But, yeah, thank you. I think that's what I'm asking that you need to do. But can you go there and read those meetings from the draft report? Please go there and let me do other things.
Can we get a program for that over time so that we can maybe set up this and are really going so if it's possible that one can come up with it all the whole week if we can split it maybe if it is possible. Then the second thing is the victim of course to the 8th, are we having a meeting in that week or not?
Okay. You are going to get to the program for what I've done with it. You think about coming to make sure that you can make it to the agreement. On the week of the 4th, we don't have a date as a committee, but through the directive of the Speaker of Parliament, there is a joint and coordinated oversight in the committee and taken by 12 committees in Parliament to where I think you need a chicken forum or something that has been endorsed there. In those 12 committees, apparently our committee is one of those 12 committees that should be part of that joint coordinated oversight, where we need to fund around the 13 systems because we need to take care of those funders and the family side and making sure that they're alive, you know, in all the ends of life, to take care of them and the elements. You have been keeping the things that have been two provinces that have been put up for already, that we are going to be able to do. What is going to happen in that week? Each committee, out of these 12 committees, will have to sponsor 5 members from the community to be part of the presentation that will be able to do those committees. So even with us, we are going to have 5 members going there. And you know the relationship is something the opposition, depending on how big the party is. So that is how we are going to participate, our 5 members from this committee. Participation committee that you. So as a committee like this, we don't have any votes in that room. Only those members will be associated with the votes in that room. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you.